Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 90. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and it is absolutely gorgeous outside. I know I've been saying that a lot, but we have had, I think, a late spring that has been fantastic as far as weather goes. And we've had some hot spells that have been uncomfortable and sticky. We've had a lot of humidity over the last couple of weeks. But the last couple of days in particular have been absolutely gorgeous. And today I walked home from work, as I try to do most days. And it's a nice 3.2-mile walk between where I work and home. The only reason I don't walk to work is because it takes too long and I hate getting up early in the morning. But it has been just, you know, nice and cool today. Has been nice breeze. And in a protected area like where I had lunch today, I decided to get a sandwich and eat outside because it was so nice. And sitting in that kind of that protected area where you didn't get a lot of the breeze, it was very, very, very warm in that, in the sun and in that nice area. And walking home today, I was really kind of struck by the difference in the colors of the lake and the sky. And I walk along the lakefront when I'm walking home in the afternoon. And it never looks exactly the same twice. That's one of the things that I really like about living along the lakefront. I don't live right on the lakefront. I live about a half a block away from the lakefront. But you know what I mean. Yeah. Because I do see the lake quite often from here. But it's interesting how different weather conditions, different, you know, the positions of the sun and so forth affect the quality of light so much along the lakefront and strike such a big difference between the view you get and the perception of, you know, the color of the water and the color of the sky and so forth. I guess I'm not really making a lot of sense here. But let it be said that it's not a boring view. The view, the colors, the conditions are highly variable. And there are some days when, you know, the colors are completely different. Now, today was a pretty typical clear sky day where you have the nice brilliant blue sky. And then you have the lake, you know, a much darker brilliant blue. And of course, being absolutely gorgeous. But there are some weird effects that you get from the lake. And this is something that's always really interested me as a photographer, as a painter, as somebody who appreciates sort of the differences that occur on a day-to-day basis. And there are times in the fall and in the winter when the lake appears almost white and is a much lighter color than the sky above it, which tends to be sort of a slate color or sort of a gunmetal color. And I've tried a couple times of photographing the lake when it looks like this, but it just never seems to come out looking right. It doesn't look the same as it does when you're actually looking at it in person. And you get this very light, almost white color to the water. And it normally looks like that during the winter. That's normally when I see those particular colors. And for a while, I was actually snapping photographs of the lake whenever I would go down to the park. And I used to go down there a lot more often than I do now. Back before I met Pete, and I had a lot more time on weekends where I really wasn't doing anything important. Now, of course, I spent a lot of time with him. But I would take photos from the same vantage point. There were two different vantage points that I would take. One of them was on a marker, kind of a pole sort of thing, facing out towards the lake, towards the beacon. We actually have a navigation beacon on the lake near me. It's sort of like a little lighthouse, except it's all kind of beaten all to hell. And it's at the end of this little breakwater that sort of juts out from the beach in the park near where I live. And then another from the lighthouse facing towards the downtown area. From Loyola Park, you get this fantastic view of the Chicago skyline. And it is really, really nice on nice days. But there are, of course, some days when it's very hazy and or foggy, and you really can't see downtown very well. But it's not that far. I mean, it's only like something like 8 miles away, and you're kind of looking straight down across the lake to it. So quite often we have this very spectacular view of Chicago skyline. But anyway, you know, that's just one of the really nice things about that park, Loyola Park, and actually being able to kind of look out and appreciate the scenery. And today is one of those days when I really do appreciate it and really do think, you know, what a really nice view to have. And I can kind of see it whenever I want to. So anyway, in other news, we have a very stupid pigeon who's kind of showed up in my life. This was kind of a weird thing. And I went out the door the other day and frightened a pigeon on the back stairs. Oh, that's not all that unusual, because we have pigeons in the neighborhood. We have pigeons living in the courtyard of the building. So it's not like they're not around, and we do occasionally surprise them. Some people will throw breadcrumbs out for them, which is horrible because it also attracts rats. But I've noticed that it's happening more and more over the last week or so. And I got up in the morning on, I think it was Saturday morning, to go and get some coffee and things before I did the show. And I meant to mention this on the live show, but I kind of forgot to. It was a crazy live show this week, and I'm not complaining, because I always like it when the live show is nice and busy and got lots of callers, and that was what it was like this week. But I just noticed on Saturday morning when I went out that this pigeon was still there, and I kind of peeked around the corner, and I saw that they were sitting on eggs, or at least one egg. Apparently, these two pigeons had built a nest right in the middle of my back stairs. And it's not even a protected area. It's not a very good place to build a nest. Now I kind of worry about them. Yeah, because they've got a nest there. They've got at least one egg in it. I could only see one egg. And it's a couple of pigeons. There's the smaller pigeon, which I assume is the female, is one of these kind of typical blue-silver pigeons that we have here in Chicago. And the male is this big, beautiful, kind of orangey-pink pigeon. And he's a little bit more aggressive when you kind of peek your head around the corner. But I think it's a terrible place because, you know, I live on the second floor of a three-story building, and there are people who live above me. And I think that I may be one of the few people that uses the back stairs much, because I use the back stairs all the time. My comings and goings are mostly out of the back stairs, as a matter of fact. But I'm really kind of concerned at this point that somebody is going to stomp on that egg, because they literally built their nest right where you have to place your foot when you're going up the stairs to the third floor. And I can't vouch for the intelligence of these pigeons, but it is awfully strange, so I thought I'd mention it. So I will continue to give you pigeon updates as time permits. I just went out and kind of looked at them before I started the show, and the mother was sitting there looking very concerned that I was coming out the back door. But hopefully I will have good news to report, and hopefully nothing will go awry with the fledgling if they do in fact hatch that egg. This is kind of the season. It's a little bit late in the season, I would think, for pigeons, but I have seen a lot of other birds over the spring, and most of them have fledged now. So this is a little bit late in the season for a pigeon egg, but I guess we'll see if it hatches, and I will keep you folks updated. Okay, so I'm going to shift gears here, moving on to the next segment, and I just want to kind of quickly issue a sort of an apology to Paul Edwards. Now, last episode I did sort of an expose of sorts of Dennis Binks, the claims to be a psychic medium and all that. And in the process of that, I played a couple of clips from Paul Edwards' show, and that led to more digging by me into some of the claims that Dennis was making, and had to look back and some of the things that he had done publicly, and kind of had to get kind of a sense of who this person was, and then proceeded to kind of systematically expose what this guy is doing. And in the process, I sort of caused, and I do say that very inadvertently, caused a bit of embarrassment for Paul. Apparently, some of Paul's friends have sort of accused him of trying to set up Dennis. And I want to go on record and say, no, Paul didn't try to set up Dennis. If anything, he tried to protect Dennis from criticism. When I called Paul's show, he had no idea that I was going to call, because normally I'm not available to call a show on Monday. The only reason I was able to call the show at all is because it was Memorial Day weekend and I had that extra day off. So A, he didn't know that I was going to call the show. And B, he certainly didn't know what I was going to ask Dennis. Now, Dennis's answers are what damned him, not so much my questions. I thought my questions were pretty lightweight and uncontroversial. But at the same time, they were pointed questions that I expected a clear answer to, and I didn't get one. During the course of this sort of talk that I was having with Dennis, he let out some details slip that they kind of just dropped in my lap. I couldn't sort of let it go. I couldn't pass it up. Now, this has nothing to do, though, with Paul. He didn't put me up to it. He didn't know I was going to do it, and indeed has been sort of embarrassed by it and maybe feels a little perturbed that somebody would actually call in and challenge the ideas that his guest is promoting. However, none of this was Paul's fault. I take full responsibility for this. So if you were a friend of Paul's and you think somehow that he set Dennis up, then you're absolutely wrong. This was all me. And I have to explain here, just for people who aren't familiar with this show, that I've been debunking psychics and I've been debunking creationists and I've been talking about these ideas and the various logical fallacies behind them and the various pseudosciences behind them, etc., for a long time now. I've actually been investigating psychic claims since the 70s. It's nothing new to me, and I don't think of it as being anything personal. So I never mean anything personal to people like Paul who just kind of were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, it is true that I would never have discovered Dennis without Paul, but what really got me started on this whole debunking that I did in the last episode was something that Dennis said on the show, which sent me to this sort of rinky-dink reality show that he was on, which sort of, unfortunately, is the only public record that we have of Dennis's claims and his claims being tested. And I actually went into this and I did the research and so forth. But I do just want to say to Paul, you know, who I do consider a friend, even though obviously on this we don't agree, is that there was no embarrassment intended. I have very strong feelings about these so-called psychic mediums. And I have seen firsthand the harm they do. The harm they do to individuals, the harm they do to families, the misinformation that they spread, all in the name of profit. And I see these things as being extremely harmful. To me, this is not a game. To me, this is a scam. This is a fraud. And it's something that is bad for society, and it's something that we need to discourage as strongly as we can possibly discourage it. I feel that what they do is despicable. I think that there's no excuse for it. And I think that when people try to rationalize it, or even worse, defend it, it's very misguided. So I don't apologize for the exposé itself. However, I do apologize if my actions caused embarrassment to Paul. Okay, so that being said, I want to move along into the next segment. And the next segment, I want to continue what I was talking about in the previous show. Now, as you folks may remember, last show ran over by 5 minutes, and that was because they just had too much material, and I was trying to cram it all into a 30-minute show, and it just wasn't working. So I did have to kind of extend the show by 5 minutes, and that's fine. But I do want to talk now not specifically about Dennis Binks, though his name is going to come up again a few times. But the thing is with these psychic mediums, okay, first of all, When you're assessing the claims of a so-called psychic, there are a couple things that you really need to understand from the very beginning. The first is that nobody in the history of the world has ever actually demonstrated a psychic power. There have been numerous scientific tests. There have been studies done out the wazoo for decades and decades and decades. This stuff has been researched thoroughly and has been tested thoroughly and has been debunked thoroughly. No scientific evidence exists that supports the existence of psychic powers. In fact, quite the contrary. That goes for ESP, that goes for clairvoyance, that goes for mediums, etc. No existence of psychic powers. That's a very important point. So then what you have, of course, are a fairly large number of people out there who like to believe that they have psychic powers. Now, obviously, they don't have you know, the results of these scientific tests in front of them. You know, maybe they believe it because they're gullible. Maybe they believe it because they're mentally ill. Maybe they believe it because they just think it's a cool thing to pretend to be. And there's a lot of people who also do it for profit. They do it because there's a lot of people out there who believe in psychic powers. And that means there's money to be made doing it. So in the end, what you end up with is there's basically three types of psychic. Now, there's different ones. They claim to be able to do different things, etc. But you can really break it down into three basic groups. The first group is one that contains most of the prominent skeptics of psychic powers, and that is mentalists and magicians, people who know that psychic powers don't exist, but nonetheless do performances, demonstrations. They understand the tricks of the trade. They know the tricks that the various psychics use. They understand the techniques of putting on a show and are willing and able to duplicate all of the tricks that so-called psychics use. But they don't set out to deceive people. They're right up front about not having any kind of psychic abilities, and they would never lead people to believe that they do. Now, this group would include people like James Randi and Darren Brown. And to a very small extent, me, because I did actually do tarot card readings on this program back, I believe it was about episode number 2021, right in that era. And every time I would do a tarot card reading, I always say right up front, this is not magical. There's nothing psychic about this. This is a trick. This is something that your mind does and not something that I'm doing. I'm just providing you with a framework within which to make sense of the sort of intellectual dissonance. So now the second category are so-called psychics who don't believe in psychic powers, but pretend to for profit. Now, there's a couple different breakdowns in this group, and I think that there is a small group of people out there who doesn't believe in psychic powers, but pretends to have them. And they would do it for a profit. However, their main goal is not to defraud people. They're not trying to make a buttload of money. They're just trying to make a living. And I don't want to judge them too harshly. Now, I was once offered a job, an opportunity to become a telephone psychic. Now, this being me not ever claiming that I've ever had any kind of psychic ability except in jest. The thing here is that, you know, there's some people out there, and I think it's ethically dodgy. That's why I wouldn't take that job, is because I think that ethically, it's a really, really bad idea. I don't want to be a hypocrite by, you know, making money off of people's gullibility. And that's what I feel that I'd be doing. But there are degrees of it, because of course then you get the big commercial psychics, and they're the ones who are really taking advantage of people. They're the ones who are really pushing the message. They have all this merchandise and books and tarot cards and all this stuff that they plug and are, you know, trying to get rich off of it, as opposed to somebody who just needs cash really, really badly. So I think there are degrees of this, so take that as you will. But these psychics, the claim to have these abilities but know that they don't, and I'm really kind of talking about the big guys here, your Sylvia Browns, your Derek Acora, and among others, these people are known as frauds. They know they don't have the abilities that they pretend to have, but it makes money. Lots and lots of money. So they're more than happy to deliberately mislead people. They put on a show. They learn cold reading techniques. They study the terminology to make it seem as though they're more credible to other people who actually believe in these psychic powers, sort of the followers, the credulous, the gullible. And they all kind of steal from each other. They all kind of use the same terminology and so forth. And so you have to learn that if you're going to be successful in that business. But the bottom line is that they're deceiving people. You know, in that light, I mean, they're criminals. There's no other way to put it. They're criminals. And they are trying to rob people of their money. And they don't care how they get it. They're unscrupulous. And they just want the money. And they'll just tell the people anything they want to hear to get it. I would say that most, if not all, of the major players in the psychic world fall into this category. They are frauds. They know that what they're doing has no value. They do it for a profit. period. And that is the bottom line. Now, of course, you can never get them to admit that, but you do know that on some level they are aware of that. And that is one of the reasons why they are so critical of people like me, of skeptics, people who would come to poke holes in their act. You know, they hate us with a passion, and for very good reason. They stand a lot to lose. If they're exposed by people like us, then what have they got? They've got nothing, because they don't have a product that they can sell. They don't have a marketable skill. It's just all based on make-believe and pretend. And so when you come across a so-called psychic who seems to really have a chip on their shoulder about skeptics, I think Dennis Binks is a very good example of this, then you have a pretty good idea that you're dealing with somebody who knows that their abilities aren't real, and they will go to any lengths to deflect criticism of their work. They'll refuse to be tested, saying that they have nothing to prove. They get very defensive when their ideas are challenged. That's the sign of a fraud. That's the sign of somebody who has something to hide. Which leads us on to the third category. And the third category are the deluded people. These are people who actually believe that they have the abilities that they claim to have. Now, they don't, of course, and it's a relatively simple task to prove it by testing these people scientifically, by doing a double-blind test with these folks. But they will continue to be in denial. They'll come up with every excuse under the sun as to why they failed. And in fact, most of them will give any excuse under the sun as to why not to be tested to begin with. That being said, there's a lot of overlap with the prior group, with the frauds, because there are a lot of people out there who may genuinely believe that they are special, that they have psychic abilities, but intellectually they know that they don't. So there's definitely this continuity here of, you know, people who on the one far side are absolutely deluded and completely disconnected from reality as far as their so-called abilities go, all the way to the opposite end of that continuity, which would be the people who know that they're not psychic, but do it for a profit. This is sort of the playground in which we need to work. Now, every psychic is a little bit different. And I don't know that every psychic has a firm grasp on whether they fit into category 2 or category 3. Obviously, they don't fit into category 1, because the category 1 people know that they don't have psychic abilities and they don't pretend to. So basically, you're stuck, if you're a psychic, if you're a practicing psychic, you're essentially fitting into this continuity of either you know you don't have the abilities and you're a fake, or you believe that you do have these abilities and you're deluded. And I would say that probably most of these folks are a combination of both. And let's make no mistake, this does create sort of an ethical dilemma for those of us who know people who are so-called psychics. I know a couple of people who do tarot card readings over the phone, that sort of work. And ethically, I'm greatly opposed to what they do, because I feel it's taking advantage of the gullible. But on the other hand, they're not like, you know, John Edward or Sylvia Brown, who's actually out there playing with people's lives and actually harming them with what they're doing. And their disclaimers are pretty solid and all this. So this is a bit of, you know, intellectual dissonance on my own part. You know, I don't want to condemn people for doing these things that they do when I know for a fact that they're not out to harm people. They're just reading tarot cards, and people are taking from that what they do, and it's sort of the way tarot cards work. And as I've done on my own show, I've seen how this works, and people think, oh, that was a fantastic reading. You know, and I don't have psychic powers, and I don't claim to. But these mediums are the absolute worst. This is one of the things that I really have a problem with, are these people who pretend to talk to the dead. Not out of any sense of outrage for the dead, but a sense of outrage that they would exploit people so shamelessly and manipulate the emotions of people and the memories that people have of dead loved ones so shamelessly, and they're doing it for profit. They're doing it to get rich. And these people have lost loved ones and come to the medium because they have this mistaken idea that the media may actually have some powers. Of course, you know, it's going to be the credulous that come to these people, folks. It's not going to be skeptics that go to the mediums. The medium has no qualms about taking their money and feeding them a load of crap. Just making stuff up, throwing out vague hints or wild guesses and trying to hit, you know, they use these cold reading techniques. This is why the, you know, big mediums like John Edward and Derek Acor and a bunch of these other people like to work in groups. And that's because they shotgun out these, things. Oh, I'm seeing something about the letter N. I'm seeing, you know, a yellow triangular thing. You know, they kind of give out these really vague clues in the hopes that somebody out there, somebody in the audience, is going to pick up on it. Oh, I'm hearing from somebody named Bob, you know, and they're going to look for somebody in the audience reacting to that. You know, this is how cold readers operate. It's all about observing people and picking up on these verbal clues. They can't talk to the dead. Well, I suppose you can talk to the dead. They just can't answer you. And the vast majority of them know they can't talk to the dead. As I said about Dennis Binks, they have about as much connection to the spirit world as your average fortune cookie does. They're just shooting out vague platitudes. They might be trying to give calming, reassuring words to people. But at the same time, they're feeding them bullshit. And this is why I find mediums so reprehensible. People who lose a loved one and have trouble letting go should go to a grief counselor, a real mental health professional with real qualifications, not to some charlatan. A grief counselor is going to sit down with them and it's going to look at the problem head on. And one of the first things that you need to accept when you lose a loved one is that they're gone and they're not coming back. But you go to one of these mediums and they're quite happy to take your money from you to give you these messages from beyond. And that doesn't allow people to heal from their loss. Because after all, you can't admit that your dead loved one is gone if they're still talking to you. And then you get sucked into this. It's very easy. Oh, well, I'll go back to the medium. Maybe they can talk to grandma again. And so people get addicted to this. They go to these mediums over and over and over. I'm sure if you ask Derek Acora about his repeat customers, he will proudly boast that he has a lot of people who come back to him repeatedly. But in fact, he's keeping them coming by stringing them along. Their loved ones are dead. It's a sad truth and it's hard to accept, but eventually one needs to accept it. But people are fed this line of crap from these so-called mediums who say, oh yeah, I can contact these people anytime I want to for a fee. These people are being shamelessly ripped off and they're not being permitted the natural healing process that they need to be going through to let go of their loved ones, to get on with their life. This is one of the reasons why mediums are so harmful. These mediums are exploiting grieving people for profit, and they don't even care. Some of them might even be proud of what they do. They claim to be helping people. They're not helping people, really. They may couch what they say in comforting words. They offer empty platitudes. Tell the people that their dead relatives are happy in heaven or whatever. You know, obviously they're not going to tell them, oh, grandpa's in hell and he's mad at you. That doesn't make much money. But it's very important to realize that just because somebody offers kind words or a soothing voice or a reassuring touch doesn't necessarily mean that they have your best interests at heart. And that's why thinking critically about these things is so important. Anyway, I'm out of time. It went quickly today. The email address for the show, if you'd like to respond, if you'd like to contribute to the conversation, please do. The email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And don't forget the live show on United Kingdom Radio every Saturday from 10 a.m. Central Time. That's 11 Eastern. And that's 4 p.m. over in the U.K. on unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. All right, from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off. We'll see you next time.